Hello and welcome to the BS History Podcast. My name is BS Dreyer, and whether or not those initials are fitting, I'll let you judge. Now, today I wanted to talk a little bit about our modern day perception of living standards in the past. How people in the past lived and whether or not those living standards can even be compared to our modern day living standards in any way, shape or form. Now, the reason that this particular topic came to mind was that I was thinking about the way in which we tend to see the past represented on screen or on TV or in film, and the way that it's always grimy and dirty and oftentimes colorless, which is a weird thing because we know and we have known for a long time that the past was filled with color. Archaeologists have found dyes in all different colors, all different shades, since the very earliest human settlements. And there is just very little chance that prehistoric or post-historic peoples in ancient times or in medieval times didn't enjoy color just as much as we do today, perhaps even more, arguably. Today, the trend does seem to be a little bit more drab in terms of what kind of colors we like to wear, certainly where I live in Northern Europe. But in the past, when you picture Rome or ancient Greece, for instance, you might picture what we see today, which is all these bleached white statues. But when they were first built, they would have been painted, and that painting would have been maintained because they loved a lot of color. So in movies and in TV, when you see these things, it's just one of those little details that can either sort of prove to a historian that here attention to detail and historical accuracy was at least considered by the director, or whether or not the director was more concerned with evoking a modern-day audience's perception of what a certain place in a certain time is supposed to look like. Similarly, when things are set, even as recently as in the 50s or in the 60s, there is a tendency to, on TV and in film, use sort of different filters and different things in order to make it seem more like in the past. But of course, human eyes have not, you know, changed considerably since they first were invented. I almost said since we first evolved to be Homo sapiens all those tens of thousands of years ago. So people, the first, very first people in Africa would have seen the world, the first Homo sapiens would have seen the world the same way that we do today. And similarly with cleanliness, there is this idea that peoples in the past didn't wash as much as we do today, which is absolutely true. Now, if you read certain news articles and little things on the internet, you might have read that the way that we use bathing and showering and washing all the time today is actually not good for our skin health. Which I can certainly believe, because dermatologists tend to agree that we kind of wash too much, actually. So who's in the right here? I'm not sure. We smell better, I'd wager, but that's about the only thing, perhaps, in terms of health, at least. But they did wash, of course. In fact, they would have washed quite a lot more than we tend to give them credit for. The Vikings is a great example that many people might have heard of, how they were attractive to women in Britain when they first arrived, because they were clean and they cared a lot about their looks. They braided their hair, which they also used a kind of lye soap mixture in order to clean, and then which also incidentally dyed the hair a lighter shade so they would look more blonde. That's not the only thing, of course. There's also in the Muslim world, where washing before meals and before prayer was a huge thing. So you'd wash if you were a devout Muslim, at least, you would wash at least five times a day because you had to wash before prayer. And that might be, you know, ritualistic, but it certainly would have also served a kind of hygienic purpose and a health standard that would have been set in those areas, which would differ from certainly how people used to live before Islam, probably, at least. We can't be certain which came before, the washing ritual before prayer or Islam. Well, I mean, we know that washing before prayer has been around since before Islam, but the ritualistic nature of it and the sort of the way in which it is done very methodically and very thoroughly might have been a relatively newfangled invention at the time, but it's still quite old. Remember, you know, Islam is well over 1,000 years old at this point. And of course, from archaeological evidence, we know that they produced soaps. I mean, humans have produced soaps since the very earliest days of humanity, basically. Certainly, once we started having livestock and we started having animal fat to make soap with and all those things, it got a lot easier and a lot more precise and a lot better, perhaps, arguably. But the very earliest humans would have also used soap, in a sense at least. Because if you have ash, which you have when you have fire, and you have water, then you have a fairly decent cleaning agent, in fact. And prehistoric peoples, Neolithic peoples, would have absolutely used that. There's no reason to think that they wouldn't have. There's no reason to think that prehistoric peoples, particularly hunter-gatherer societies, were not aware of the importance of keeping things clean. They would have seen a festering wound, for instance, and known what that does to a human, potentially at least, you know, with blood infections and all sorts of nasty diseases. So they would have absolutely had every kind of incentive to keep clean. And so there's no reason to think that they didn't try and keep as clean as much as possible. And of course, now we know, particularly with like Neolithic peoples and prehistoric peoples, that in fact, it wasn't all that unusual to see an old person. Well, why wasn't it all that unusual to see an old person? Was because the average age of a human at the time was very, very low, around maybe 30 years old. The reason for that is that so many people died in childhood. Surviving childhood, reaching puberty, reaching maturity, you had a pretty good chance of actually becoming quite old. It would not have been unusual 30,000 years ago to meet a man or a woman in their 60s. And it might not even have been all that unusual to meet someone in their 70s, maybe even 80s, probably 90s and 100s is pushing it a little bit, but the lifestyle of the people would have been, I mean, a relatively healthy one. It would have been strenuous and it would have been really hard. And they would be plagued by things like arthritis. But if you were lucky enough to have had a fairly consistently nutritious diet throughout your life, there's no reason to think that those people wouldn't reach 60 years of age, possibly even older. And because they didn't have some of the bad habits that we have today, such as, well, they would have had drinking, of course. Drinking is a very, very old thing. Fermenting fruit and stuff isn't a terribly difficult process, but they would have had less chance to drink as much as we do because they were on the move constantly. So that's one thing. They wouldn't have had smoking the way that we do today, at least. They wouldn't have had pollution the way that we do today, at least. And certainly wouldn't have had sugary foods and fatty foods as much as we do today. So those factors considered, it would have been, you know, relatively likely that you would reach 60 and certainly at least live, you know, 40, 50 years old once you reached puberty. So the living standards then already we can kind of tell, well, our view is skewed at least because we tended to have in the past at least, now very much refuted and many people are aware of this. but it still kind of colors our perspective that we think of these peoples, these prehistoric peoples, as groups of, you know, a few children and some relatively healthy adults and no real old people, but they would have been there. These groups of people, prehistoric peoples, which we today in modern day can kind of see at least sort of mirrored in certain senses by some tribal peoples around the globe, well, they took care of their elders. There's absolutely no reason to think that they didn't. We now even know that other humans, that is to say, other species of humans, such as Neanderthals, absolutely took care of their elderly and showed, you know, certain reverence when they died. You know, they had burial rituals and stuff. And you don't do that if you don't have the kind of mental wherewithal and resources to engage in that kind of practice. So they must have had a relatively good living standard in order to be able to pursue those kinds of activities. And that communal bond in those small groups would have also meant a lot for the generations that came after those old people, because those old people would have had a lot of knowledge to share, a lot of wisdom in terms of how to survive a quite harsh, at times at least, existence. And so they were important elderly people, even though they might not have been quite as valuable in terms of actual hunting and actual gathering, which is what those peoples subsisted on. Now, of course, when you move up into history and you reach farming practices, people start to settle in areas for longer periods of time, and you even start having urban centers. Well, things change. Things change because people suddenly live much closer together, and suddenly the water isn't as fresh anymore. There's a lot more chances for disease to spread in these larger populations that live on far less land. And those issues have been with humanity ever since the very first cities. And it has been tackled by humanity since those very first early cities. There's a reason why cities almost always, particularly the very early ones, were around a river. And usually not a slow-flowing river, but a relatively fast-flowing river. That is not to say it's, you know, completely filled with rapids and just a constant stream or something, but a river with enough flow, enough force in the water to at least kind of keep the water clean, so it's not too muddy and not too dirty. Because ancient peoples would have absolutely known the importance and would have sought out clean water. And we see this in the placement of cities throughout Europe, throughout Asia, throughout Africa even, and certainly in Mesoamerica, at least, it was important. And that knowledge certainly wouldn't have just been, you know, water makes for good transportation. That would have undoubtedly been a factor in it, but they would have also known that clean water is necessary to have a good, long, healthy life. There's no reason to think that they didn't. In fact, it's mentioned multiple times as early as many thousands of years before the birth of Christ in places like China. Now, some ancient cities were known for being dirty, for having troubles with these particular issues. Rome is a very good example. And Rome, of course, was not at all the size that it eventually would become when it was first founded. It was rather a rural, perhaps a center, but certainly a rural one. There was a river, but it wasn't a very large one. And it wasn't actually particularly fast flowing even, not compared to certainly the Nile or the Yangtze River or the Ganges River in India. But in Rome too, there were these issues. And so the Romans had to engineer solutions, and they did. The aqueduct, of course, one of the very most famous symbols of Roman engineering and ingenuity, and for a very, very simple purpose. You needed fresh water into the city. And of course, also the sewers, that system to expel waste from the city again, was innovative and very, very important. Another thing about Roman society and cleanliness that's interesting is that Romans would use olive oil to bathe in. Certainly the nobility would, the people who had money, and would actually often shave a lot. And the reason for shaving a lot wasn't just that, you know, they wanted to look good and smooth, but rather that also serves some hygienic purposes. And there are other practices that now seem useless in terms of the kind of hygiene standards that we can maintain today, that at the time would have had some purpose. Circumcision of men, not of women, of course, but of young boys, is one such example. Not just because you can indeed have your foreskin kind of tightened, which can, from birth, that is, it's a birth defect of sorts, which can lead to very painful adulthood for a man. But you would also have had a sort of hygiene reason to do it, particularly in the Middle East, where it's warm, relatively hard to access fresh water, clean water that you could wash in, and you would have worn a lot of clothes because, paradoxically, because it's so warm. So there's a lot of factors there, a lot of reasons for grime and stuff to get into nasty areas. And so it would have served that purpose as well as the religious aspect of it, of course. Similarly, a part of those early Middle Eastern Abrahamistic religions with a single God and all this was the dietary restrictions. And those restrictions, of course, partly at least, it's theorized at least that partly these restrictions were due to what was the kind of food that you could possibly keep clean and safe to eat in those environments. So there's a reason why in, say, Northern Europe, it was relatively easy to have pigs, for instance, as farming animals and eat them with relative security that they weren't going to suddenly have a bunch of diseases and stuff. But in the Middle East, that was a very different sort of situation. Similarly with seafood, of course, and other parts that are even today not considered kosher by Jewish peoples, but at the time would have had a sort of added layer of hygiene standards that you couldn't maintain with certain types of food, and therefore just banning it on the basis of religion would have been a good way to discourage people from eating those kinds of things. Another area where religion sort of influenced the way in which people consumed products like animal products because of a sort of a knowledge that you needed to maintain those things for certain living standards is in India, of course, where even today eating cow meat is considered sacrilegious. But at the very earliest sort of stages of Indian civilization, the earliest myths of even Hinduism center around cows and cow herding. And that's because those cows were so incredibly valuable, not for their meat, but for their, you know, power and possibility to aid in farming practices that the Indians had at the time. So that's why they were such a revered creature and continue to be such a revered creature even today. Another factor that people tend to forget when thinking about living standards in the past is that of herbs. Peoples in the past would have had a much better knowledge of which plants to use for certain ailments, or which plants were poisonous, which were not, which were helpful, what ways they were helpful, etc., etc. And that's kind of knowledge that most people today don't have, but certainly in the past would have been absolutely instrumental, not just for people who made their living as kind of doctors or, you know, wise women and that kind of thing, but also just for, you know, your average everyday person in the past. They would have known what kind of tree that they could use to clean their teeth most effectively, which, you know, end on a stick to gnaw on to make the most effective bristles for cleaning your teeth, that kind of thing. And they would have known when they were out traveling, etc., what plants they could use in terms if they got a cut or some little wound or something that they needed to clean or keep clean, what could they use. And all of those things factored certainly into a higher living standard than we tend to think of them having today, because that would have meant that a lot of little kind of ailments, diseases, and that kind of thing would have been countered. So if you got a cut and it started festering a little bit, well, you would know what to do about it, and everybody would have done so, and nobody would have run around, well, certainly very few people would have run around without, like, you know, half your hand because of a blood infection that you had and had to have everything amputated. But amputation, of course, can be a good strategy if you stand to lose your life, and it was absolutely practiced, you know, since the very earliest human. Again, we kind of see that this attention to personal health and hygiene was absolutely there, and for some reason that is very rarely depicted on screen or in television. And in our modern day perception, we tend to think of those people as somehow less aware of the importance of personal health and hygiene than we are today, when in fact it might be very much the opposite way around, that they were much more fixated on just everyday health and hygiene than we are today. We might today, you know the signs of, you know, getting a little bit too chubby, and we go jogging, and we tend to think about exercise and that kind of thing. They wouldn't have needed to, well, the vast majority of people wouldn't have needed to think about exercising. They would have just needed to think about different aspects of personal health, such as, well, keeping your teeth clean, which we now know, of course, can help. If you have clean teeth, it helps with other diseases too, such as heart disease and different other things that are somehow connected in your body. Those intricacies, those medical terms, and mapping out the sort of interrelated correlations and stuff that happens within your body, those ancient peoples would absolutely not have had the knowledge of. We know this very clearly from their kind of medical texts, which were often really just kind of worse than just common good sense knowledge. But at any rate, that common good sense knowledge of what plants to use, what things to do in certain situations, would have pervaded every past society. Certain parts of it would have probably just been instinctual. Humans like what is pretty. We don't like what is dirty. That's almost an instinct that you have just as a baby. I mean, as a baby, you try out the whole world. It's all new. You put everything in your mouth, but you also spit out what is bad. Children, and you know, the younger they are, the more they dislike tastes such as bitterness. And the reason for that is not that children are particularly picky. It's a evolutionary response to the fact that children will encounter and, you know, try out a whole bunch of stuff that is potentially very bad for them and possibly even deadly. And particularly bitter agents in things signify that a thing is potentially at least poisonous. So spit it out. You don't like bitter. Don't like particularly sour things. You don't like particularly strong flavors for those same reasons. And of course, children in the past were the same way. There's absolutely no reason to think that they weren't. And another aspect of living standards that is kind of apart from health and hygiene is security. Security is very important for humans to thrive. And, you know, in the very earliest human societies of hunter and gatherer, it would have been a relatively easy thing to accomplish, really. You know, you had other people as your main threat, and then, of course, animals as a secondary threat. And the way that you would have combated both were sticking together, tightly knit groups where everybody trusted each other. And you would have possibly, if you ventured into area that was unknown or known to be unsafe, you would have kept watch. You would have had fires if the threat came from animals, or you would have had just a night watch sort of rotation shift if the threat came from other humans. But once you get into sort of urban living, you also see that kind of changing. And the reason that we have such safe and secure societies today is, well, partly because we've institutionalized those same mechanisms. Now it's not a question of you with your small, tightly knit group of friends or family that look out for each other in terms of, you know, surviving other humans. It's an institution, in our case, the police usually. In previous decades, centuries, it would have been more a job for soldiers or militias. The kind of militias that you see on paintings such as The Night Watch, which, by the way, is not the actual title of that painting. It is much, much longer, and I cannot remember it for the life of me. But that very famous huge painting of The Night Watch, which of course sort of showed the very early militias that the Netherlands employed after independence from Spain. And those kind of militias that would have, you know, walked around those cities in order to keep order. And that was the precursor, arguably at least, to the modern day police forces that we have around the world, going around cities, keeping order, even at night. Which sort of brings me to my larger point with this little episode, which is that our modern day perception of past living standards are so tied up to the way in which we live our lives now in modern day societies, which is on so many levels dramatically different from pretty much any point in the past. I acknowledge that. But those mechanisms that we have developed for our modern day security, health, happiness, well, those mechanisms were developed by past peoples. And they were developed because past peoples were as concerned, if not possibly more concerned, with having high or better living standards than we are. Well, at any rate, I hope you think today's episode has had a little bit more history than BS. You can find me on Twitter at BSHistoryPod. That's at BSHistoryPod. Feel free to reach out with questions, comments, critiques, etc. And last but not least, thank you so very much for listening.